Reshma Barar is a life coach and a confident coach. She helps her client to build an unshakable confidence in their life. So in this episode, we had a deep conversation regarding how could we bring that confidence in our life and sustain that confidence in order to have that massive growth. How could we bring that change in our life that we really want to? Because often we find change is so much painful, and even not changing is so much painful in our life, right? So how do we overcome all those circumstances in our life? If you really want to know the secret, then this episode is for you. Welcome to the show, Reshmadi.
Thank you for having me here.
And thank you so much for joining. And thank you so much, Vikesh, for joining again.
All good, man. All good.
So, just to start with, Reshmadi, I have seen one of your videos. I think it was probably 1 month ago, and I think it was about motivations. Like there was like you were saying like motivation is temporary, and what we need in our life is like. Every day what we do action, that actions that we need to do every day, even we get motivated or we don't get motivated. And that's such a true. And I really like that. And after that, I started following you and I started watching your content. And that's when I feel like we need to have this conversation on this podcast. And that's when I started approaching you. And thank you so much for joining here.
Of course. I'm glad that you approached. Thank you for having me here.
So let's reflect about your journey to Australia. When did you come to Australia, and why did you come to Australia, and what was your initial lifestyle during in Australia?
I came to Australia probably late 2008, early 2009. I can't remember the exact date, but around about that. I came in as a student. I was doing diploma in disability work, as you know, that's what I was told by the agents to do. So very simple girl came to Australia and struggled. Obviously it was around recession time, so I wasn't jobless for about 3 months. It was really hard, and I finally found a job after 3 months through networking, like, you know, through a contact. That's when I started working, and pretty much an international student life like everyone else has gone through. That was me.
So what were you looking forward on those days?
I was looking forward to a great education, to be honest. I wanted to come to Australia mainly because I didn't want to be reliant on my parents for my fees. That was the main reason that brought me here. I said to myself, I want to pay for my fees myself, not be reliant on my dad. And obviously I didn't know the reality of life until I came here. But I was still a bright student right from my home. So education was my top priority, giving my 100% in my school, whatever I did. And also learning in terms of working. Obviously, I'd never worked back home. I was barely 18, 19 years old, as you all know, right? So we all go through that. So working ethics and all those things, and really doing the hard work, that's what I was up to.
So when I checked your profile, like you were an accounting student, right?
Yes, I did accounting after I did my diploma. Because obviously there was no permanent residence pathway after diploma at that time. And so I had to go into a bachelor's in accounting. So I am an accountant, yes.
And you are now a life coach.
As far away as it can be. Yes, I am a chartered accountant as well as a life coach, both.
Yeah. I really feel fascinated. I'm like, when people from one background or from one field shift to another field, like for us, like for general people, for us, like even to change a workplace, it's so much struggle for us. And there are some people like you who change from one field to another field. I mean, like, how did you guys get that courage? Or just tell us about when did you feel like you need to change? You need to change in your life, or you need to change this field, and why you need to change?
I never changed my field. I'm still an accountant. I still work full-time as an accountant. But what shifted in my life was when I went through a lot of terrible things in my life. As you, I probably are aware, I went through a massive trauma. My relationship failed. And so I had a lot of baggage from my past that I used to struggle with PTSD for a while. And I wasn't getting any solution to that. Like, you know, my nightmares were still there, trust issues. I hated all men in the world at one point. So all of that was not resolved. So I was looking for answers to my questions. And in that process, I became indulged inside of personal development world. And I was reading lots of books, listening to lots of podcasts, implementing all those things into my life. And I came across neuro-linguistic programming. So neuro-linguistic programming, I was so fascinated because the first time I heard about this, or I found it powerful from a book from Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within, I used some of those techniques in his book and I realized that my PTSD was gone. Something that I was struggling for 3 years. My PTSD was completely gone because I changed my belief based on that book. And I was so, so fascinated. I was like, what is this NLP stuff? It is so powerful. You know, it really grabbed my attention. And so I signed up for a course, and all because I wanted to learn more about this because it fascinated me. You know, it changed my life. And then I didn't realize that the course that I had enrolled into also made me a life coach. So it was not up until the last day of the training. Everyone was like, oh, are you going to start your coaching business, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I'm here to just for my own growth, you know, until the last day. Then the last day, that's when I released fear completely. And when I released fear completely from me, that's when I saw that I was so light. You know, I felt like I released a 40 kilo weight from my shoulders, put it down, and I felt like I had wings. I could fly. And I was like, oh my God, I was carrying so much burden with me of all these limiting decisions, of everything from the past. And I felt so heavy, and now I feel so light. And I truly felt transformed in that moment. And that's when I said, you know what? This is amazing feeling. I want to be able to give this to other people. And that's when I decided to be a life coach. Now, how it would sit with my full-time job, I didn't think much about that. I was not intending to quit my full-time job because I love accounting. I love my job. I love my career as an accountant. So I never intended to. And I, as you know, I've been in the industry for like 2.5 almost 3 years now, still an accountant, right? So I'm still doing a full-time job and I'm doing everything on the side as a part-time gig. And I absolutely love it. And people ask me, like, how is it that you manage both of them? Like, you know, like, how is it? Because accounting and life coaching are so different as they can be. Yeah. But, and I asked this question to myself as well in the initial days, like, what is it? Like, why am I so driven in both of these fields? Like, you know, you can't have, you know how they say you can't have your legs in two boats, you'll sink or you'll drown, yeah, right? So it was pretty much like that. Then I came to realize, I looked up my values and I realized my top value is contribution. Now I'm contributing to people's wealth, tax, compliance side of things as an accountant, right? And I'm also contributing to people's life in their happiness, in their success, in their goals as a life coach. So in both of these professions, I am contributing to someone's life. And when I saw that, I stopped questioning. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And that's why I'm doing both of them. So here's my answer. I didn't make a switch, but I pretty much embraced both of them together.
So that's so great. I mean, like, my personal experience is just like we want to shift from one profession to another professions. I mean, like, we are not happy with whatever we are doing, and we seek like that works. Maybe might be a very good place, or like the one of my friends where they are working, maybe they are very happy what they are doing regarding mine. But finding that true passions, finding what you really like, I think that's a great thing.
And absolutely.
And how do we know that this is our passion? Like, we are so much confused regarding our passion. So I think as a life coach, I think you probably have you probably know the right answer. Like, how do we know that this is our right passion? So this is something that is made for us.
Well, there are two ways. First, you already know within yourself what really drives you, what really attracts you. Like, I ask my clients this question: what could you talk about for 30 minutes nonstop? You know, and the topic that they could talk about nonstop is what they're passionate about, right? Mm-hmm. But another way of finding out your passion is by actually exposing yourself to that work. You see, because you may be as passionate from outside, it might be a shiny object syndrome. You might just be so attracted to something from the outside because it looks glittery and glamorous. And like, you know, as you said, your friends are happy, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, if they can be happy, I can be happy as well. But until you're inside it, you don't really know whether this is really for you. And a lot of people, including myself, developed that account, that passion when you start working. So I just developed my passion for accounting after I started working. At first, I was like, you know what? I have a degree in my hand. Let's just see if I can find a job, right? That was the approach I took because I didn't want to waste the degree in my hand. The first job I applied, I got. And then I was like, at first I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll take it slow. And then eventually I developed my passion in accounting. I was like, oh, you know what? I love this job. So the best way to find passion is for you to start, you know, getting exposed into that field and see if you really enjoy that work. That's what I say. That's a surefire way. The other one is like, you know, without, if you're not really into that thing, you don't really try it at all. And just from outside, you may actually end up not liking it. So that's my answer to it.
Yeah, I think that's true. Even with in our podcast, what we talked about, like you wouldn't know about something like Undead unless you try it. And the other thing, I don't know, what do you think about this, Resma? Like, could your like passion like change with time? You know, like you're passionate about something today, and like after a few years, it's like it doesn't matter to you, you're passionate about something else.
Oh, absolutely. Is that like
it can happen, right?
Yeah, it happens. It happens. If passion changes, you see, because you are not the same person you were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you had different set of beliefs, different set of values. You've grown so much. You become a different person now. And as a different person now, your priorities are different. Your life circumstances are different. And then so what you want to do is different. Because see, 10 years time is enough time for you to be the best in your whatever career you choose. And then after 10 years, you'll be like, oh, you know what? I'm bored of doing this. Let's try something new. A lot of people do that. And your passion can change. Yeah. Absolutely.
That happened to me a lot. That's why I was like, money. We also had this talk with Nidus too, and we had the same conclusion. Like, it could change, you know, like depending on the circumstances where you are. Like, even after being like for the change, like from being in Nepal and coming here to Australia, like it's different. It could change based on that only, you know. And the other question I actually wanted to know about you as we were talking about your student life, what do you think would be like a difference from then and now being an international student? Was it like much easier for you? What are the different circumstances? What is it like in your view?
I think it's much, much easier for students, like the new generation students who are here. Because when I came here, we were like pretty much the first generation. There was nothing built for us. There was no one to guide us. And it was much harder for us to navigate. But the new generations, like, you know, there are some people who try to exploit, obviously, but there are a lot of help. There's a lot of, with the internet, the availability of the internet, with the availability of information and access to everything so quickly and easily. There are Nepalese associations more than ever before now, right? Like, we are helping our international students in many different ways, volunteering, paid services, whatever. So it's much easier to find information and path and guidance for international students now. And like, there are people to warn you, hey, don't do this, don't fall for this trap. But there was no one to tell us in that aspect, right? Having said that though, obviously the university life is not easier. Obviously, getting the permanent residence is absolutely not easier. So there are difficulties in that aspect. But coming to Australia and actually getting your feet on the ground, I think is much easier for international students now than it was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we have more facilities as well as more network and more community, Nepalese community, and that's I think one of the beneficial. But regarding to that purpose, I want to ask one more question regarding like why is it so painful to change? I mean, like to change something or to change even a habit or to change our goal. Go for a change in our life. It's so painful. Not even that. What I found is like not being changed, even sticking to one things for a longer time, that is so painful. So how do we balance on these things?
Well, it depends on really what you value, right? So changing is painful because of the uncertainty. Human beings, the most basic need is certainty. And when you try to change, it's uncertainty. I have seen several women, and I was one of them, staying in an abusive relationship for many, many, many years because there is uncertainty if you leave that person. Because you don't know what the future looks like, right? And I have seen lots of people sticking to the same job because you're like, oh, this is giving me a stable source of income. I don't know what's going to happen if I change it. And I don't want to change my lifestyle. That's why sticking to the thing. So the main pain is uncertainty. You don't know what the outside the change will bring, and not having the faith. You see, your thoughts and what you believe about yourself has a massive impact. Those people who find it really hard to change, they don't believe in themselves in a way. I'm not saying just blindly jump, you know, close your eyes and jump. No, of course you take a calculated risk, but those people who have more risk tolerance are likely to make that change than those who don't. You see, and you, it's all about coming to doing the research and understanding like what is required and planning, you know, planning ahead, being proactive with your approach. And if you really want something, you will definitely do that. There will be eventually a point where it becomes so painful that you will hit your rock bottom and then your life will force you to change, right? And most of the people wait until you hit the rock bottom and that's it. That's it. You have to change. There is no other way, right? But your power and your courage, your power really lies in knowing that, okay, I need to change, and having a plan and then executing it. So, and it comes to, and you're another question about why is it painful to stay in something? That's because you don't really enjoy it. You know, you chose something because you felt like it's going to give you something like maybe stability, security, constant source of income or whatever it is. But then you're not really enjoying because after a while it became repetitive, or you're not being heard, you're not growing. There are various parts of why people are not happy to stick to something. And so it's important for you to understand what are your values in that aspect, whether it's your career, whether it's your relationship, whether it's your family or, you know, anything. Understanding what is it that your values are, and then once you understand your values and is that value being met in this current circumstances, then you will be able to finally know, oh, okay, this is why it's painful for me, and then make the switch actively and consciously.
Wow, that is such a powerful answer. I really like that. I mean, like, I want to add one more question on this, like, we want something, we want to change, but how do you know that this is the right direction for us? I mean, like, how do you make sure, what is that steps we need to take that this is the right direction or this is the right choice for us? Is there any methods or any things we can do on that?
Yeah, for those people who are conscious enough, there is a little voice in your head that always tells you, I want to go this way. But you are afraid to acknowledge that voice. You are afraid to even realize that this is what my voice is telling, right? For other people, they are completely confused. And that comes from all the baggage from the past, you know, emotional baggage, all these fears, all these limiting decisions that are staying in your head. And the best way to overcome them, like if you have absolutely no idea where your life is supposed to head and like go forward, the best way is to get a life coach for yourself. And I'm not saying it because I want to brag about myself or anything, but because I see it in a lot of my clients. A lot of my clients approach me saying, something is missing in my life. I don't know. I am not happy. Something is just missing. And there is just so much cloud in their heads. You know, so many things, got responsibilities, this, that, so many things that's clouding their judgment. They can't see clearly. And my job as a coach is just help them, you know, put all these clouds aside and help them see through clearly. My job is not to tell them this is what you got to do. My job is to make them see it themselves. This is this is what I've got to do and what I want to do, right? So the easiest way is to have a life coach. Other ways are like just immerse yourself into self-reflection and asking yourself the right questions. And what is it? You know, sometimes, as I said earlier, people are not really willing to even acknowledge certain things because they know how painful the answer is, right? So really having the courage to really have that self-reflective moment and asking yourself, am I really happy in this situation? Is this really my long-term life? Does something need to change? What does need to change? And how can I achieve that, right? So having that reflective moment and setting some goals for yourself and making active progress towards those goals. So that's what I would say.
I think that's right. And you talk about like getting a courage for that. So as you are a confidence coach, so how do you, I'm like, first, let me, I want to know about what is confidence? Is confidence a mindset? It's a belief or it's an attitude? What is a real confidence is?
All right. Confidence by definition is your belief in your own abilities, judgments, and decisions. So it's more like you believe in yourself. That's what confidence is. The people who lack confidence, they don't believe in their own decisions. They cannot make decisions because they're like, oh, what if I'm wrong? All these cross-questioning and inner critique in their minds, you know, start to take place, and you just absolutely cannot trust your own self. That's the lack of confidence.
So, and is there a way to build confidence? I mean, like sometimes we have a confidence, but it's not a, I mean, like it's not a consistency. And some days we don't get confidence. We are so feeling low in our lives. So how to maintain that confidence? And you also talk about unshakable confidence. So how to build that unshakable confidence in our life?
Yeah, it comes down to a variety of factors. And as you said, you know, sometimes you feel high confidence, sometimes you feel low confidence. Now that is related to your state, your physical state, your physiology. What is your physiology like at that moment? Are you just sitting in a couch, like a couch potato? Of course, your confidence will be low at that moment. But if you're fully dressed up and you are like suited, booted, ready to go to work, your confidence is going to be high. So how you're showing up, with what energy you're showing up in that particular moment, really shows your confidence. For women, you know, I encourage women to put makeup on, but not to hide their flaws, rather to make themselves feel comfortable. I put makeup on, but I don't do it because I want to look good in the camera. I do it so that I feel confident, because it boosts my confidence. You know, when you wear your best dress, you feel confident, right? So little things like that add up to your confidence. But most of it comes down to your state and your mindset. So what is happening physiologically? What state are you in? Are you in that happy and positive and energetic state? Or are you in that sad and low and lonely and depressed kind of state? That makes a big difference, right? And the other thing is your mindset. See, confidence comes a lot from your belief about yourself. The main thing that I see in people that lacks, that makes them lack confidence massively is, I am not good enough. Now this, I'm not good enough, is coming from comparison with someone else. They're always looking at someone else and saying, oh, this person, we came to Australia at the same time, they've already gotten their permanent residence, I haven't, right? There you go. Because I'm not as good as them, you won't have enough confidence in your life. You know, someone like you, you're a student in your own class, they found the job in their own field, but you are still working elsewhere, that in a job that you're not happy, then that chips away your confidence. So all these references that you have to people who are better off than you is, you know, eventually eroding away your confidence and stacking that limiting belief with lots of references saying, oh, I failed here, I failed here, I failed here, I failed here. So if you're focusing on all these failures and shortcomings in your life, your confidence goes down. If you want to change, you need to shift your focus from all the failures to all the achievements, even little ones, you know, like, oh, I did this, you know, and that achievements comes with practice, comes with experience, comes with repetition. So that's why I encourage my clients, hey, go and do this thing, this thing that you would never do before, never try before, go and try. What will happen? You know, at worst, you will fail and there will be something to laugh about. You might just laugh about it, or you might just, this is just a life experience. That's it, you know. A lot of people, they have this fear of being judged by other people. And this, a lot of people struggle with this. And I ask them, really? Okay, tell me. Fear of judgment. What will happen if they really judge you? You know, and they think, and they're like, really? Nothing. See, there's the answer. Nothing will really happen if someone judges you. So why are you that much scared about other people? So because you've changed your focus from being at yourself to someone else, you're giving the spotlight to someone else. That's why the fear is so high. The moment you bring it back onto you, your confidence increases. So there's, as I said, there's a lot of different factors and different factors that play a role in someone's confidence. And these are only a few that I mentioned.
Yeah, I like the one like the fear of judgment. That I used to have that. I mean, like just 5 years ago, I was very fat. I was like 80 or 85 kg, and I looked so fat, and I was so unconfident. And like, I don't have that confidence to go in front of any girls and just to talk with them. I feel so shameless. I feel like I'm not so handsome. So I have that kind of a kind of fear to talking in front of the girls. And just so just 3 months ago, I started my gym and I started going gym and I lose my weights, and now I'm around 63 kg. And now I feel so confident. I mean, like I feel like I don't know how I like you said that taking a step and actually giving consistency. I think like that. I went everyday gyms and I feel I can see the changes on my body. I can see changes on my physical activity, how I talk. And now I don't feel that so, I feel so confident in front of any girls to talk. And that's so true. And also, and talking about beliefs, we have so much beliefs from our childhood, from our, some from our family or some from our community. And that always stick to our mind. And even we try to change, the first thing is that comes is always out that beliefs. So how do we change that beliefs?
Okay, as I said earlier, a little bit, I touched a little bit on beliefs. So beliefs are formed when you come. It's not, okay, let me rephrase that. Beliefs are nothing more than a conclusion that you have drawn out of your life experiences. So when you have repeated life experiences and you feel like the conclusion of all of this is this, that is your belief. I'll give you an example. For example, you, as a child, you were not the fastest, you know, whenever there was a race in the school, you were last in the school, you used to fail. And then like studying was really hard for you. You know, your classmates would get it very quickly, whereas you, it would take you another half an hour to understand the same concept. So then out of all these experiences that you got, you said to yourself that I am a slow learner or I am not as a brilliant student. So you see how it is formed? It's based on 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different references in your life experiences that you concluded when you say, because our brain really likes to generalize things, you see. And when you, when it looks at all these experiences, huh, what is common in all of them? I failed. So you know what? I'm a failure. That is how your beliefs are formed. And a lot of it is also adopted from other people. Now be careful with this, because oftentimes when you say I'm not good enough, it is not you who said that. Someone else told you that. Someone else made you feel this way. And it's often, like I ask people, when did you decide that? Where did you get that from? Where did you learn this from? And it's often like you learned it from your parents, your siblings, your teacher, your friends, you know, someone told you this or someone made you believe this. So our beliefs are that easy. And one thing I'd like to tell you about belief, a belief you can change, you can choose what you want to believe, right? So it's that easy. Like, and I remember my coach telling me, Rashma, like not just me, like he was saying it in the whole group, he was saying, your beliefs are your choices. You choose what to believe. And if you knew that you can choose to believe, why does still someone want to believe that I'm a poor person, I'm poverty, I'm full of poverty, instead of I'm a millionaire? See, you can choose. You can choose to say, I'm a millionaire. What goes? You don't have, it doesn't cost a thing to think that you're a millionaire, right? So that's how easy it is. So now coming to changing that belief from all these references. So what you really need to do is look at those same references in a different way, or choose to focus on different references in your life where you have been successful, where you have done things good and come across a long way. So all these good things that you have done, look at those and have a look. You know, you were actually good. And the same student that I was talking about who really takes a long time to understand, who never comes first, everything. Hey, but you made through. You made through the whole school years. You made through the entire university. You might even be here in Australia, right? That is a freaking big achievement, isn't it? Right? Yeah. So why focus on all those bad things that happened, which was just life experiences, and not focus on the good things that you have actually achieved? And as soon as you change your focus from all those bad references, let's say negative references, to positive references, your belief will change. That's the easiest way. So bottom line, change your focus.
Oh, yeah. I like the way you said, like, belief is just choosing what you believe. Or I mean, like, we normally we are more focused on our failures than a success achievement. We forget our achievements and we always remember our failures, and we always believe that because of this we are not good enough, or because of this I can't do that. Even I have that experience, like you said. So since I'm from a Mongol community, and my family or my parents, my fathers always used to say it's like that. So Mongols, Mongol khali lato huncha. So that kind of beliefs always is in my head. So as you said, I believe that Mongol lato huncha. So that always give me, and that always make me believe like, okay, I am always a lato. But when you said like, when changing that focus from one negative to positive, and I think maybe before 1 year or 2 years, when I started watching podcasts, when I started listening to the different peoples, different motivation peoples, and when I really started listening to them, and that what I believe, that when I realized that, oh, actually that's not my belief, actually that's when I choose to believe that I was that Mongol lato huncha, but that's not true. So as you said, like, changing that shift from one negative to a positive, that has been really helpful for me.
That's good. And yeah. and how you said Magar Lato Hunsa, that was not your belief, was it? Someone else put it in your head, isn't it? So if you really drill down into where did I get this from, you'll find that someone else made you believe this. And as soon as you realize that it's not mine, it's someone else's belief, I'm going to give it back to them. You know what? I'm a different person. I'm individual. I'm unique. And I have enormous capacity and potential within me. As soon as you tap into this, there's nothing impossible. And your confidence just skyrockets. So well done.
Yeah, I think it's also like I think like we should have that questioning things, like for the beliefs, to change our beliefs, you know, like questioning, like, does it make sense? It is logical, you know, like what, like even in your case, like thinking about like why does it have to be like this? Like, is it only my parents who are saying this, or is it as a whole everyone is saying this? You know, you can always ask questions, why am I doing this? Why is it being like this? You know, maybe that helps, because that's what I do in most of the cases. Like from the very beginning, when I say that, I have always been asking like questions, especially being antisocial, in terms of like rules and regulations we have like within our community and our culture, you know, like why am I doing this? Like they don't have proper answer. It's just what has been believed and what has been followed to generations, and we just believe that. But I think asking the questions why, and as all you said, whatever you said, those different things, I think that would help to change the beliefs in those conditions. But yes. I also have like trouble. I think self-confidence is also about like self-belief, right? Like believing in yourself. But sometimes you don't have it. Like there are days when you don't have that. So is it all about like analyzing what is happening and just focusing on the right things? Or is it something else to there, like that doesn't let you get out of that, you know, like low confidence zone?
Yes, to come out of the low confidence zone, change your state. First thing, do what makes you feel confident. Like, you know, as I said, dress up in your best dress, whatever you need to do to be in that peak state of your energy. That's where most of the confidence is. And second thing is always, like, as you said, asking, the importance of asking questions. It's really important in changing belief, I understand. But even in your low of the confidence stage, like when you're like, oh, completely approaching a new project or like meeting with a new person, of course you get nervous. But then if you ask yourself, why am I nervous? And what is the worst possible scenario that could happen? And imagining that worst possible scenario, and is it really the end of life? Is it really the end? Is it really going to make a huge difference? When you ask those kind of questions, you will automatically see that, you see, it's, even if I fail, if I be horrible at it, it will be a life experience, you know, and I'll learn so much from it. So it's about changing your attitude and really looking at something as a learning experience rather than, oh, I need to be successful in this. I need to successfully execute this. If you always think about, you know, this perfectionism and really wanting to be perfectionist and really wanting to do everything right and always being successful in this, you will indefinitely fail. Like, you know what I mean? Like you'll, well, I was trying to use another word, but you will definitely fail, right? Inevitably, that's what I wanted to say when I mixed it up. Anyway, you will inevitably fail. And in that moment, people beat themselves up so, so much, and that chips away their confidence even more. See, silly, silly, silly person. I told you can't do it, and you still went ahead and did it. And look, you know, you made fun of yourself. But instead of that, if you change your attitude and say, all right, I may actually make fun of myself, but you know what? Life is not to be just wondering, rather trying and living the experience and learning from that experience. So let's give it a try. Even if I become really bad at it, at least I'll have the experience. At least I'll have something to improve upon. And when you look at it and when you approach an opportunity with that approach, that I'm going to give it my best shot, doesn't matter what, you know, because then your confidence will increase. And I'll give you my example. When I was made a manager at my work, right? I'm a manager. And I'm like, I have never, ever done this before. Oh my God. It was such a huge responsibility. I don't know how to do this. At first, the amount of work that was thrown in my face was like enormous. Here I was, someone who was just working under someone, and just like I had given set of work to do during the week, and I'll just da-da-da-da-da, that's it, I'm done. You know, I know what my work week looks like. I know everything was manageable. But as a manager, now I have to manage my workload as well as everyone's workload. I was nervous as hell. But my attitude was like, you know what? Amazing opportunity. I will learn. And guess what? This is not my own business. That I will really be. If it was my own business, imagine how badly I would fail and the impact would be so bad. But I'm working for someone else. If I fail, I'm under a safe roof. Someone is there to help me. I can always ask for help. Oh my God, this is amazing. I took it in a positive way. See, my attitude was positive. And you know what? I'm thriving at it. Now, not to brag, but I feel like I'm thriving. I have learned so much over the last year as a manager in a managerial role. It has expanded me. It has challenged me. And I have learned so many new things about myself and other people as well. And I know tricks now, you know, like what I need to do, what I don't need to do, what my shortcomings are, how can I improve upon them. And see, I wasn't confident as a manager when I started, right? But now I am confident. I know how to manage. I know how to manage my workflow. I know how to manage my staff. I know what my staff needs. I know how to like create a cohesive, good working environment, right? And see how much I grew just because I took that opportunity. If I had said that, oh, you know what? I've never been a manager before. I won't do it. What would happen? I would still be where I was, right? And I would have missed out on so much growth. So change your attitude. Worst come to worst, you may fail, but you know what? It's just a learning experience. Failure is just a stepping stone, right? If you look at it in this way, there is no fear and there is no lack of confidence, is it?
Yeah, that's true. So so changing attitude, so how do you, I'm like, is there any recipe or how do you maintain that attitude from negative to positive? I mean, like, just like a confidence, sometimes we have that attitude, but it's not a consistent. So is there any daily ritual habit or is there any recipe? So how do we maintain that positive attitude consistently in our life?
Your morning rituals are very, very important. As I said, like most of the people just wake up out of the bed, brush their teeth, get ready and go to work. First thing that they remember is, what do I need to do? And like, you know, all the negative emotions that they were carrying from yesterday. Oh, you know, I had a fight with my partner. I should still be angry at her, or she should still be angry at me, right? As soon as you wake up, you remember this. And then you're again tuned into the same where you left your life. And then you're carrying that life right from that moment and then like going on in like an unconscious circle. First thing, you need to break that. So in the morning, prime yourself. And it's a huge, huge, huge benefit for your confidence and changing attitude. Because when you prime yourself, when you get ready, you know, take a good shower, take your time, do your meditation, go to the gym, whatever you need to do, but priming your mind, like visualizing how you're going to live this day today. Like, you know, you might have a huge meeting coming up, like, you know, and your success depends on this meeting. Visualize how you're going to approach this instead of it becoming a big shock for yourself. Like, you know, visualizing, how am I going to do this? I'm going to take it slow. I'm going to take it one step at a time. I'm going to give it my best. Right? If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. We are preparing your mind even for good and even for worst, right? So whatever the day goes by, it is not unplanned. And that has a huge, huge change and shift in your attitude, in how you show up and your success as well. Would you agree?
Yeah. I agree. Actually,
it happens. Like, there are days when I wake up and plan days, and at the end of the day, you feel much better than the days when you don't plan and just go with it, you know? So it does make sense.
So I, every day, this is mine. I will show up as I will show up with my 100% today. I'm going to give my 100% to my work. I'm going to be like, you know, in terms of productivity or whatever it is, I'm going to give my 100% for this day. I'm going to live it to the fullest. You know, this is what I show up with, that energy. When I go into a coaching call with my client, I say, I'm going to give my 100% to this person. I may not know how to solve their problem yet. I may not even know what their problem is. But if I go with that attitude that I'm going to give my 100% here, whatever I've got, I'm going to give it. Then the chances are, you know, I came out successful. Even if I didn't, hey, at least I tried, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, Resmati, now I have this question. I mean, this is related to all of the international students and graduates. And as a life coach, I think this is probably the best question to ask for you. Like, well, as we are international students, we come here and initially we do a different kind of jobs. And after we graduate, and there are so many international students and graduates that they want change in their life. They want to start their professional career, but they are still stuck somewhere where they don't belong. And I think when that durations start getting longer and longer, we have low confidence and we have low self-esteem. And just want to know how do we change that? I mean, what is the first step that we need to do so that we can break that loop?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. A lot of people ask me this question, actually. So first thing that you need to break, and this is from my observation of everyone, is people don't make their career their first priority. That is the main problem. People think, oh, I'll set up my visa, I'll set this, and then I'll search for a visa. By the time your visa is all set, it's 2 years gone. 2 years gone, and then you are not a fresh graduate anymore, and the chances of getting a job is slim, right? So what I say to people is, make finding a job, your number one priority, even before you have finished your visa and, you know, changed to your temporary residence, as soon as you finish your degree, start applying, you know. And people say, oh, I applied for so many jobs, I never heard back. And I'm like, well, how many jobs did you apply? Well, probably 15, 20. And that's it, you gave up. You know, like, there is no consistent plan, there is no consistency. So you need to make it a number one priority and be, you know, better than yesterday at it. Track it like it was a huge job. Your future depends on it. People don't see the intensity. People don't see the consequence enough of not focusing on it. People just say, oh, my visa, my visa, my visa. Hey, your visa, regardless of this job or that job, your visa, you will get there because it's a must for you, right? But why don't you make your job a must as well? Those people who have made job their must, they have gotten it. And I have numerous examples of people who have got jobs, right? So all these people who say, oh, you can't find a job in my field, I say bullshit. You can find jobs. There are lots of people who prove you wrong. I am one of them. My sister is one of them. I have lots of people, like Roshna, your friend, right? Roshna is one of them, right? So, like, there are a lot of people who have done it. And so if you tell me in my face that, you know, like, I can't find a job, I'm like, you're not doing enough. You're not putting the right effort. Yes, a lot of people are misguided. They don't even know what to do, what a resume should look like, what a cover letter should really look like, what really should you be addressing and focusing on. Yes, but there are lots of help available. If you're really keen for it, you'll find a solution. Those people who, you know, I'll give you a funny fact there, because I'm also an accountant and life coach. People come to me and say, hey, I really want to get this job as an accountant. Can you please help me? I'm like, yeah, sure. No problem. Let's book a time. Do you know how many people do not reply back then? Let's book a time, I say, and they don't come back. People book a time with me. They don't show up in that call. You see, because they're not serious about it. Only the very, very serious will come in that call. And when they call, if I have time, like right now, I don't have a lot of time for that. But if I have time and if someone is really genuinely interested, I will say, all right, let's book a time. I'll show you what to do, what I did, right? I'll give them my best. I give them the best strategies that I use and I have seen other people use that. And that's not everything, obviously, but what I know, I give them my best. But even when something is being available for free, people don't grab it because that's not their number one priority. So that's what you need to do. Change your focus. Make this your number one priority. Do whatever it takes and focus on becoming the best at it. Focus on making your resume the best, you know. Get feedback. Ask for help. Okay, what's wrong with my resume? How can I make it better? What's wrong with my cover letter? How can I make it better? What trainings can I do? What else can I do? You know, don't ask. Start asking questions. And when you ask questions, the answers are given to you. But the problem is people don't even ask questions. Just believe the mass belief that as an international student, you can't find a job. And that's it.
Yeah, and we don't have PR, we don't find a job like this. We have a belief like that.
Exactly. But it's not like that. I got a job when I was still in my student visa, right? A lot of people have. So, no, that's all wrong.
So, yeah, I just remember, like, I think it's in the third podcast, one of my friends, Ronald Quirrell, and he was saying, like, he applied for more than 100 times. And then only he got his first job. And he said, like, in that time, he has a mindset, like, I have to get these jobs anyway. So every day he just keep on applying. And he also asks with his friend who already got the jobs and what is wrong with him or how to make it better, how to do interview more better. And then finally, after hundreds of rejection, he got his first jobs. And yeah, as you said, having that consistency and having that mindset and keeping priority our career first, I think that's more important.
Absolutely.
So as a life coach, I just want to know, what's the source of your wisdom, or how do you make sure that you have the right kind of informations, or how do you become mindful that you have all the resources, all the knowledge that you need?
There is not any possibility that I can have all the resources and knowledge in the world, right? But whatever I learn, it's come out of my research, understanding people. I pay close attention to people. I understand how human mind works very well. Like, you know, what is possible to do with the human mind as a master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming. That's my specialty. So I know how our mind works, and that helps me understand people's patterns and really help them change that patterns, identify those patterns and stuff. So that's where most of my understanding comes from. But also I study a lot. I have to acknowledge I haven't been able to study as much as I used to purely because of time restrictions. But I do like to study. I listen to podcasts when I'm going. And one thing I'd like to mention is you can't learn everything in your life. It's about as you become more exposed and more experienced, your wisdom, you know, starts to change. Your knowledge starts to become a wisdom. And that only comes with experience and exposure and repetition. That's what I think. You know, to be a specialist in one field, you need 100 times repetition of the same thing, right? If you try to have lots of general kind of information and lots of general everything in the world, you'll become a jack of all trades, but you'll not become a master of anything. So to become a master of something, you really need to go deep, not wide. Right. And so that's my approach. I'm really going deep in the area that I specialize in and really try to understand people. I listen to people's problems and I try to figure out how to solve that problem. Like, what is this? Where is this problem coming from? And how can I solve it? And that's what makes me, you know, good at what I do.
Yeah, that's so true. And just want to know your perspective regarding who is life coach and why life coach is so much important? I know you already gave some examples, but just tell us about who is life coach and why life coach is so much important in our life.
I think people have forgotten how to live properly lately. We have been so trained to think negatively. We are living a very extremely high rushed life, and as a result, you know, our health is suffering, our mental health is suffering. There are lots of mental health cases now than ever it was, you know, in the history. And that's because we don't know how to look after our emotions. We don't know how to look after our happiness. You know, like, happiness has not become a focus. We have become so materialistic. We've been so away from our real spiritual self, you know, and we're rushing to get something in our life where we are pursuing pleasure instead of happiness. And so a life coach is someone, in my opinion, who has done something better, who has overcome certain challenges. Now, life coaches are specialized in different areas, as you know. Some are general life coaches. Some are like specialized, like I specialize in helping someone build their confidence. Yes, I'm a life coach, but I like to do that. That's because I'm more passionate about this, right? But life coach is someone, in my opinion, who has transformed themselves, right? They have seen worst. And they have gone through worst, and then they have seen the better part as well. And then they are willing to show that path to someone else. That's what a life coach is. That's what I understand. Like, you know, they know a little bit something in one area of their life, something better than you do, and they're willing to show you that path. That's what a life coach is. And why it is so important, as I mentioned earlier, people are struggling with mental health issues, not knowing how to regulate their emotions, not knowing how to regulate their mindset, the power of their thoughts. You know, if only people knew how powerful our thoughts are, no one would ever think negatively, because your thoughts manifest into reality. You know, people are not aware of this. And so someone should be there to teach them, hey, don't do this. And you know, it's easier to identify our shortcomings, but really hard to overcome them. And that's when we need help. And life coach is one of the best person that you can go to help you overcome those shortcomings that you cannot overcome yourself. You see, I try to coach myself. I have lots of tools and techniques, yet I find it easier when I'm working with someone else, isn't it? I am a coach myself, but I sometimes, when it comes to coaching myself, it's hard. I need help, external help. And I reach out. I have a coach for myself. You know, so it's easier when, because someone else can identify patterns that you may not even be able to identify. You know, like a lot of us, we run on our values and beliefs, and those very values and beliefs may be running against us. We might be sabotaging ourselves. And every time we see that, oh my God, I'm failing at everything I do. I'm failing at everything I do. But you are the same person, like you are sabotaging your own success, but you don't see it. And then life coach, because they are someone external, they know better than you, and they can tell you, hey, this is what you're doing wrong. We need to change this, you know? So that extra person who knows better can help you shift through easily and effortlessly. So that's what a life coach is.
We actually had this workshop kind of thing when we were in the leadership conference, when they actually taught us like how to look at something from like a third person's perspective view, you know, exactly what you were saying, what the life coach does. There was this exercise, I forgot the name and exact, but what we basically did was we took a like moment or an incident that happened in our life, and then we looked at it from the perspective of me, the other person, and someone else who was not even in that group. You know, so that somehow helps you to see different perspective and see, okay, it's only me or is it like everyone or what's... It's a good exercise to actually look at it from outside you, you know, like it gives you a different perspective. It's good to have different perspective and different opinions, and that helps to build your confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. What you're saying is when you are like looking at your problems, you're looking subjectively, filtering through all of your filters, values, everything, and the pain and the emotions that comes with it, right? But when you're looking at it outside, it's like a problem in a box. You know, when you are inside the box, you cannot solve it. You have to get out of the box to solve it. And that's exactly what it is. When you're looking at it from third person perspective, who is objective and who's non-judgmental about whatever it is that's going on in your head, right? It's easier for them to identify, oh, there's a pattern going on here, rather than when you're inside the box, you can't see anything because you're so trapped in those emotions and everything that's going on in there. So yeah, well said, Bikis. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I also like Resmadi said, like, thought are so much powerful, like, thoughts are something I think that will make us or that will break us. And I remember in one of the book, like The Power of Now, like it says, like in the first paragraph, there is like, you are not your mind. And that's so much true. Like we think like whatever comes in our mind, whatever thoughts we have, that we are that person, but that's not so true. And I think that's also right. And I just want to add one more question on this one. Like when we realize that, but we don't have that confidence, or we don't seek out help. I mean, like, how do we break that loop? I mean, like, seeking out help, really asking for help when we really need that help. I don't know, maybe that's our beliefs, or we feel shame on that, or we have a fear of judgment. How do we break that belief, or how do courage to act, to go out and ask for help?
Yeah. Okay. One thing that you can do is, if I don't ask for help, what is the worst consequence in the, what is my life going to look like in 5 years time if I continue this pattern? I want you to visualize what your life is going to be if you continued exactly without changing a single thing in your life right now. 10 years from now, how is your life going to be? You know, and you will see that it's so freaking painful just because you didn't ask for that one bloody help. What would happen if they rejected, they put you in the wrong direction? Fine, at least you are moving somewhere. But right, but if they rejected, at least you asked. There is no regrets. But you don't ask for help. All you have is regrets, and you have lost time and time and time. And like, look, 10 years down the track, your life could have been so much different in a different trajectory just because you didn't ask for that help. You know, and I'm asking, and I'm also, I'd like to emphasize on asking the help with the right person is important. If you go and ask for help with the wrong person who is not equipped or, you know, capable enough to give you the right help, then they can damage your life. So don't ask for help from friends who are struggling in the same boat. You know, ask for help from someone who's done it successfully. You know, what your problem, who solved your problem successfully, ask for that person, and go for someone who's non-judgmental as well. You know, because there's a lot of judgment in our society, and you think that, oh, this is my elder person, I'll ask them for help, and they are suffering from their own limitations. What do you really think they're going to give you? They're going to guide you in the wrong direction. And that's what happened to me, right? I asked for help from someone who was exactly like me, no different to me, was a friend at the same level as I am. And what they're going to do is they're going to give me suggestions based on my filters, my beliefs, and my own limitations, right? Like, I'm going to, if, say, for example, I think that women should not go to school. They should be housewives, for example. Then another woman, she comes to me and asks me, hey, I really want to go to school. What do you think? What do you think I'm going to tell her? Why do you want to go to school? No point. Just have babies and stay home. That's exactly what I'm going to say to them, right? So be careful who you ask for help. Absolutely. But ask for help, because there are lots of people who are willing to help you, know who to ask for help. And one rule of thumb is go reach out to someone who's done whatever you want to do successfully, who solved the problem that you are in successfully. Ask that person. Chances are that they will be more than happy to help you.
Yeah, that's great.
I think it also comes to like about knowing yourself better, which comes with like age or maturity. That's also another question. Is there like a way for someone to know themselves better? Like, you know, like figuring out what is it I like to do, I don't like to do, or who am I, basically the overall question of, is there a way to figure out like knowing yourself better?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You need to go inside, not outside. See, because the answer to that does not lie outside in the material world. It's inside you. So always, you know, spending that time with yourself and trying to understand what motivates me, what doesn't motivate me, what do I like, what I don't like, why do I do certain things? So asking questions, empowering questions to yourself, but reflecting inside with yourself, that's what will help you. Understanding yourself and getting to know yourself better.
Mm-hmm. Rashmati, I think you have this coaching section. I mean, it's a 12 weeks coaching section, I think, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah. 12 weeks, yes. Most of my clients are at 12 weeks. But
before we go there, I actually had something here. Can we talk about that? Like, we have been talking a lot about thoughts and processes, right? So this is something that I've got from somewhere, which says, like, whenever we are, like, feeling bad, depression, or when we have low self-confidence, there are three things we could look into, and they are somehow intertangled with each other. That is our emotions, our thoughts, and our behaviors. So how can one work on that? Like, how can, the first thing question would be like, how to figure out, okay, I'm having a negative thought first or negative emotion first. Like, they seem to be like same thing. Like, it's like being sad. So it is like emotion or a thought. Does that make sense, or does it have anything?
Yeah, I think we are confused with the, what is thought or what is emotion. Yeah, sometimes we feel like, is this a thought or is this an emotion?
Yeah. Okay. Very good question, because very good one. Mm-hmm. So first thing, I was about to tell you something. Yeah, before that you asked me something, I was about to answer that. But anyway, that's all right. No problem. So first thing, it takes awareness. How do you identify? Awareness. You need to increase your awareness. And if you're a person who is really absolutely unconscious about what you're doing through your life, start doing meditation. That will help you become more and more aware of inside and outside world, right? So increase your awareness. And with awareness, you can recognize your emotions, your thoughts, and everything, and your behavior better. As you said, thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, they're all interrelated. And I'm going to explain how it is interrelated. So when you are in a certain situation, first thing that goes into your head is thought, oh, I can't do this, right? I can't do this. Then it triggers emotion of fear, because the thought is related to your emotion, fear. And you are like really fearful. And then when you are in that fearful state, that's when your physiology, your behaviors becomes changes, your physiology changes, then your behavior changes. And then you become nervous in your, when you're talking, you're like, your voice starts to shake, or you can't even speak at all. Imagine being in an interview, right? Someone asks you a question that you don't know the answer to. First thing that goes is your thought, oh, I don't know the answer to this. Straight away, emotions trigger, right? Then emotions trigger, then your physiology changes. From confident person, you become less confident. Then your behavior changes and you cannot even answer to that question. You start mumbling, you start terrifying, you start shaking. See, that's what happens most of the time. So most of the times it starts with a thought. So The key to change is catch your thought. As soon as it comes, ask yourself, what did I just think? You know, replay, what did I just think? That's what I thought. Change it. You know, that's a key. Does it answer your question, Vikas?
Yep, absolutely. Good. That's the kind of thing I try to do most of the times, like whenever I'm having like those negative kind of feelings. Where is it starting from? Like, what happened that triggered this thing that's causing me to have only negative thoughts or negative emotions? Where did it start? I try to figure that out. And if I could do that, if I can do that, then that somehow solves the problem that I was having always.
So think about it. Most of the time, it comes from a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good to know that. It's good to know. If I'm confused, like, where to start, maybe start from the thought.
Yes.
Good place to start from.
Good one.
And also, I mean, like, we find sometimes, like, when we have a negative thought, we don't accept that, and we try to resist that. Why this thought is coming always? I mean, like, we try to resist that. And I think that is also one of the problem, like, what do you think about this, Rashmati?
Yeah, resistance. Like, you're trying to avoid, you know, when you're in a resistance mode, acknowledging it is too painful. Because if you acknowledge that, if you let it come in, it's too painful, and you know it's going to be too painful, and you're trying to save yourself from that pain. But what you got to remember is, by not acknowledging it in that moment, the consequence is going to be way higher, highly more painful later on. So all you're doing is just stopping, putting like a temporary band-aid to something that is going to, you know, be worse without treatment, without appropriate intervention. And the first thing is really acknowledging what is going on.
Yeah, that's true. And you talk about meditations, and I've been doing meditation as well, and that really helps. I mean, like, even just for 5 minutes, I do meditation every day. And I think that has really helped me to become aware of my thoughts and aware of my emotions. And also, I think that is really helpful in our life. Like, before, I used to think like meditation is such a boring, boring thing. We have to be we have to be still. But when I continued it, I have been continuing this for since 2 years. And even for 5 minutes, I do in the morning. So I don't do forcefully. I just do for 5 minutes. Now it's been just like a habit for me.
What do you actually do, like when it comes to like someone who have never done meditation, what do you mean by meditation and what do you actually do in the meditation?
Right, good question.
For both of your questions, what do you do actually?
Yes, okay. Meditation is nothing more than just quietening your mind and training it to focus on one thing. See, because your brain is, because we think so much, there is so much thoughts going on in our head, your brain cannot stop from throwing a impulse, you know, like a thought, like a little like electric wave. It can't stop. So meditation is the process of eventually stopping your brain from thinking and making it concentrated in just one thing. That's what the process is. And the benefits are enormous. Like, you know, your concentration power increases, your focus increases, you are much more happier, you start looking at life in a different way. As I said, wisdom also comes from meditation. When you get to higher levels of meditation, wisdom comes from there as well. Like, you know, there are so many things that you don't need to read from books. It comes from within. You know, meditation also helps you in that aspect as well. There's a lot of knowledge in your mind, but it turns into wisdom when you really have that brain power and you know, when you grow more as a human being, your consciousness grows, that turns into wisdom. That's what I meant. So your consciousness grows, your mind is not chattering every time. You know, have you seen people who jump from one task to another task to another task and like going recklessly and carelessly about things? Like, you, like there's so many tasks to do and you're like, you can't concentrate. You're like, I do this 2 minutes.
And I do that all the time.
Right?
Happens with me.
That's because you can't concentrate your power into one thing. And meditation is a solution to it. You know, a lot of my clients, they say, I can't concentrate. I cannot focus on everything. And you know what? I put them in a 30-day meditation challenge. First thing. That's it. Meditation, that's it. You know? And if they
what
don't...
What do they do in that, like 30 days? So.
Oh, there is a meditation challenge in YouTube that I used for myself when I was drowning in depression and PTSD in my traumatic days. Mm-hmm. I almost lost my job as an accountant, as a graduate accountant, because I couldn't concentrate at my work. In that moment, when you have a lot of trauma and lots of negative emotions going on, I realized that our brain forms this wall and everything that I was learning was just going on top of that wall. It just wouldn't go inside my brain. And I've been a bright student right all my childhood, all my adult life. I'm a fast learner. But here I was struggling to learn. I was struggling to even grasp the concept, like a debit credit entry. It's the basics of accounting, but I just wasn't getting it. And I remember, I'll share with you this story. I remember calling my mom, who's in Nepal, and I said, Mom, I cannot learn this. I think accounting is not for me. I think I should quit. You know, like I was crying after I went home from work. And Mom said, you've been through a lot this year. Don't put yourself in that much pressure. If it is not something that you think is good for you, leave it. Do what's easy for you. Just be easy on yourself. But if you want to change your mind, do meditation. That's what my mom said. My mom and grandmom are both very huge on meditation. And so I had never tried meditation before that. So I found this 30-day challenge in my YouTube, and I started meditating without any hopes or aspirations. Mom said, do it. I know it works amazingly for mom and grandma. I just don't know how it will work, but I'll try. So I started giving it a try. Come day 7 and day 8, day 9, day 10, that's when I started to get the hang of it. And then towards like day 15, I was addicted to it. I was like, one day I don't do meditation, I'm like, oh my God, I missed it. As soon as I close my eyes, I'm like, oh my God, I missed it. And then I saved my job. My concentration came back. My ability to focus came back. And my, you know, the same happy me, I started seeing life in a happier way because of meditation. I hadn't done any intervention at that stage. No intervention, like no psychologist or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I saved my job purely because of meditation. That's how powerful it is. All right. I was going to drown in negative emotions and PTSD, and I saved it. So that's how powerful it is. And I recommend it to everyone who's suffering with concentration issues, you know, mind jumping in different places, lots of thoughts going on in our head. And a lot of people complain to me that they overthink. They cannot stop their thoughts. This is the process. It's not going to be easy, and you may not connect with it for a week or two, but stay consistent and come around week 2. That's when you'll start getting the hang of it. And that's when you'll start seeing the effects, the good effects of it. And you will love it so much that you will want to do it every single day. Like how you're doing, Neeraj, right? You do it every single day. No one's forcing you to, but you love it, isn't it?
My question was more like, what do you actually do in that specific? I'm meditating.
Oh, yeah, okay.
What am I doing in those 10 minutes actually?
Different.
So,
So meditation are different types of, there are different types of meditations. So how the first and easiest one is to focus on breathing. A lot of meditation get you to do that. That's the first step. Now, there are different types of meditation. There is like open eye meditation and stare at something meditations as well. Like, you know, there are different techniques. So you choose what you can do. But I suggest my clients go through different types of meditations in that 30-day challenge. And then at the end of it, you'll know what you like, what you connect with the most. There is guided visualization. You listen to someone's voice and you visualize as what they are giving instructions to you, you visualize. And that way, your mind is not concentrating on other things. Rather, it's just concentrating on one person's voice and just following their instructions, right? That's the easiest one to get started with. There is forgiveness meditations. There is mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness is nothing but just listening to inside and outside of yourself. Like listening to the sounds, paying attention to what sensations you're feeling in your skin, what sensations you're feeling in, you know, what sounds you can hear outside and stuff like that. So that's mindfulness. And there is, as I said, breathing exercises, there is breath work. There is a lot of different types of meditations. So you need to go with the easiest one to start off with is a guided meditation. When you listen to someone and just follow their instructions, it's much easier for a beginner level. Then when you get to advanced level, intermediate level, that's when you can really focus your mind and no thoughts, completely inside it, and activate more parts of your brain.
So as per my experience, I mean, most of the things you said, Reshmati, that's so true. And my experience is all about my experience. And if there's something wrong, just correct me as well. I'm like, my experience says that like meditation is something that that should not be something forceful. Like it is not like you should do meditations. I think meditation is something you enjoy it. And as Reshmati said, meditation is something that focusing on one particular thing. So as Reshmati said, I do two kind of meditations. And one is in the morning, first day, I'm like the one day I do a breathing meditation that I completely focus on my breath. But it doesn't mean like my complete focus in my breath. My mind goes somewhere. But I bring my mind to again breathing. Again, my mind divert to something else. But again, I bring back to my breathing. And so that is one kind of meditation I do. And the other meditation I do is like I focus on the different part of my body. Like sometimes I focus on my knee. Sometimes I focus on my eyes, on my back, in the different part of my body. And that gives me like that. Sharps my focus, like wherever I want to focus my mind, that completely gives my mind to that particular focus. So that's the kind of meditations I do. But as my experience, it's not like something you force on it. I think it's something you actually have to focus on and one particular point. I'm like, even something you're passionate about, like if you're passionate about photography, then giving 100% focus on that photography, I think that can be also meditation. Yeah, if you are 100% focused on something, like, then I think that's a kind of meditation. That's what I believe.
Okay. It is in a way, but the benefit of actually closing your eyes and being able to concentrate on one thing, when you open your eyes, there is a lot of stimulus around you. Your mind is highly, highly activated and it's processing information from outside. Right? You're processing all these sensory inputs. And when you close your eyes, there is no sensory input. That's the whole purpose of meditation. So there is nothing to process for your mind. And that's when you can really quieten your mind. When you are really, cycling is really soothing and relaxing for you. Like for everyone, they have some kind of activity that does that for them. Mm-hmm. It's good for you, but your mind is not completely at rest. If it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Meditation is really when your mind is completely at rest and you can take it to the next level of relaxation and really being at focused. And I agree with your point, Neeraj, that it has to be something that you really want to do. At first, when you don't know, you have to force yourself. See, discipline. Discipline, important. Because one day you'll be motivated, another day you won't be motivated.
Mm, yeah.
You want to make it a habit, discipline. So first 14 days, 21 days, force yourself every day. Mm-hmm. Then when you get the hang of it, it will become easy for you. It will become a habit and it will come naturally to you. It will become integrated into your life that you can't go about your life without meditation. Like for me, I cannot do meditation and gym at the same time purely because I don't have enough time in the morning. So what I did, solution, 3 days gym, 4 days meditation. That's what I do. And I'm still doing it, right? See, when something is a must for you, you find a solution, isn't it? My gym is a must for me and my meditation is a must for me. I can't do it together. So let's alternate it. That's my solution. So you don't have to do meditation every single day if you don't have the time. But when someone says I don't have time, it's like choice.
You can always manage that.
Yeah, you can always manage. It's choice, obviously. But at first, I really highly recommend doing it every day, so it becomes a habit and you understand it properly. And once you understand it and you're trained your mind, then even alternate days is okay. But meditation, like anything, it's like a muscle memory. You know, if you do it consistently, there's a lot of benefits. But if you stop doing it, then it will eventually fade away, the benefits.
Yep.
Good.
And I think Headspace is something that I use often. Like they have like a 10 like sessions that's like free. Anyone can use that for free. So basically, it teaches you exactly what Nidhi was saying and what you were saying. It teaches you how to focus on your breath. And it guides you to scan your body as a whole. And it tells you, it has a good example where it shows that your brain is like a monkey who can't just sit in one place. It would keep on going to different places. But at the end of the day, you bring it back to the same rock, and that's how you concentrate. So it's a really good one to have, Headspace.
Calm is also a good app. And there are lots of good videos in YouTube itself. Like if you have a paid account, you don't have to worry about the ads and stuff. Mm-hmm. YouTube has amazing meditation videos too.
Well, can you give us like a link or something of the thing that 30-day challenge you said? Absolutely. Maybe we could put it in our descriptions and people could try that.
Oh, absolutely. I recommend it to anyone and everyone because that's what saved my life. And if it saves someone else's life, absolutely. I'll send it to you.
Now, just tell us about your 12 weeks training, that coaching session, and just tell us why it's so important. I mean, like, if someone is listening to this or watching to this, and if they are thinking of joining a coaching session, then why do you think that someone should be in that coaching session, or why so it's so important?
Well, people join coaching for various reasons, mostly because people are not happy in where they are. They feel trapped, or there is a lot of emotional trauma from the past that they haven't released, and that's causing them various problems in the present life. That's why people have various goals. But in my coaching program, first, I really understand what is it that the person wants to achieve and whether it is in my specialty. Can I help them? And how committed they really are. Some people really want to just understand their options. Others are really keen. I really want to change my life, and I want to work with those people who are really keen. You see, because those people who are gazing their options are not really serious, they're not going to give their 100%. See, as much as it takes from the coach, my 100%, the client's 100% is also required for us to make a lasting change, right? You can't just think that, oh, as a coach, it's my responsibility to change someone. No, it's both of the people's responsibility. So that's what I do. And so as I said, people come to me for various reasons, mainly building confidence, achieving goals, being happy, you know, overcoming anxiety, depressions, overcoming emotional traumas, or, you know, any kind of trauma or PTSD or anything like that they had in the past. So various reasons. And it's important because that has been suffering for you for a long time. And if you could solve it by your own, you would have done already. Now, this is something that I learned it took me a while, but I learned. Time doesn't heal anything. Time just makes it easier for you to bear it. I struggled with PTSD for 3 years, and I said, you know what? I think time will make me better. Time will make me better. Bloody 3 years later, and I was still struggling with those nightmares. Yes, not as often, not every night, but every 1 month or 2 months, I would see that nightmare. It would take me to square zero again, you know, and my whole day and night would be ruined. I couldn't sleep at the night after that. So time didn't heal me. It just helped me live with it better. And when you live with that kind of trauma, your life is so, so, so limited. Your mentality, I was living in fear, like thinking, oh, my ex will find out and he will try and attack me again where I am. So I had to be so careful around my social media, where I'm going, what pictures I'm posting, so that my ex doesn't find out where I am, you know. And that kind of fear, living in that kind of fear is not sustainable, and it's bad for your health as well, for your physical health too, because negative emotions eventually turn into illness. You know, prolonged negative emotions eventually turn into illness, mental or physical. It manifests somewhere in your body, right? So that's what I learned. So time doesn't heal, and you know that you haven't been able to overcome that. That's why it's important to have a coach who knows what they're doing, who knows how to solve your problems, and your pathway to that place. You can absolutely reach there yourself. It might take you a whole year, but with a coach, with me, it's 12 weeks. That's all I ask. 12 weeks of time with me, give your full dedication, full understanding, and full effort. That's it. Your life will change for good. So that's my thing. And not all of my clients go in 12 weeks program. Some of them go in an 8 week, some of them go in a 6 week program, depending on what problem I'm helping them solve and where I'm, what goal we are trying to achieve. So it will depend on that. But yeah, most of the clients go into 12 week program.
If I'm like someone like who's going through some kind of depression, but I don't know, like, am I depressed or I'm just not self-motivated? Would it be a good idea to come to you or go to a doctor? they say, can I come to you, basically, if I have depression or some kind of thing? Can I come to you? That would be the right question.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can come to me. Okay. And the, like, I offer free 30-minute session to anyone who's seeking for help, who wants to understand what their problem is, because often people don't know what their problem is. They can't see their own problems and patterns. And in this call, I ask questions. I understand, I uncover what's happening in their life. And sometimes I see a pattern and I say, all right, you know what? This is the pattern I see in your life. This is a problem. And I can help you solve this. If you want to work with me, this is what the time frame is going to be. This is what it's going to cost, right? If you don't want to, at least you know where your problem is starting from. You know, so that people, and sometimes people just need some motivation, some encouragement, some good words as well, right? And I do that too. Like, not everyone becomes a client. I talk to a lot of people, and I even if they need some motivation or some positivity and like some push to take a decision in their life, you know, I'm here. So absolutely, if you're feeling like you don't know what you're doing, or if you feel like you're depressed, you're like, you need some help, absolutely reach out, because I won't judge you. You know, and any life coach, really, a life coach is trained not to judge you for your circumstances, right? So reach out to them and say, hey, I just need some help. Can you tell me, like, show me some path, and I'll do my best.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So probably this is my last question. I think if Biggest doesn't have any questions. So this is something like, is there something like we have to find the right life coach in our life, or it is something like something like that? I don't know. So is there something like to find the right life coach, or so how does it work? I mean, like, is this the coach that I'm looking for? Is there something like that? Or
yeah, absolutely. See, because a coaching relationship is a relationship of trust. If you cannot trust your coach, you are not going to have a great relationship, and the results you're going to get is not, because you can't trust them, and you will be too impatient. You'll be questioning everything, and it's, the dynamics is just not going to work. So your life coach is someone that you connect with and that you think is the right person for you, because who understands your problems and who knows the answers to your problems. So whoever you feel you connect with, you know, that's what you got to go to, because you see, and if you don't, like, for example, someone is very new to me as a life coach, they appreciate my work, but they wouldn't be daring enough to come and ask, tell me, hey, can you help me? Because they don't know whether I'm going to be a good fit, or they haven't known me enough to build that trust yet. Does that make sense? So if you follow someone, if you really like someone, if you think that this person knows my problems and they've been addressing my problems in their posts, in their videos, and you feel like, oh, okay, this person really knows what they're talking about, then that's the life coach you go with. Because there are hundreds of people around you. You don't connect with everyone, do you? You only connect with very few, right? And that person that you really connect with, that's the life coach you go to.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer, I think. So, because do you have any questions?
I had another one. Maybe you could cut and edit this and put it at the front.
Yeah,
but
no problem.
My question was, from your perspective, Resma, what is depression? Because I think we had it in our last podcast. We don't know what depression actually is. There isn't enough talk happening about it. So from your experience, because you have the degree in that, like neuroscience and everything, is that neuroscience? I'm sorry, I don't know the exact term for that.
That's fine.
But yeah, basically, what is depression, and at what point should we realize that we should go out and get help? Like, what is depression as well, first?
Depression, in my opinion, is prolonged sadness. You are sad about something in your life. And then it becomes a daily part of your life. Every day you're focused on that sadness, something that you don't have an answer to or resolution to. And then you focus on that sadness every day, you remember it. And then it becomes more and more and more, to a point that your body becomes addicted to that negative emotion and that negative state. And that's when you become depressed, right? And then when you are actually, depression has a range. You can be mildly depressed at the beginning, and then you can be severely depressed when there is a chemical imbalance in your body. Now, that severely depressed person, they will need psychotherapy and they will need medications and everything to regulate that, right? But the good thing is, you can catch in your early days when you don't feel like to get out of the bed, you know, all the symptoms of depression, right? So when your sadness comes to the level that you cannot find an answer to it and it's interfering in your daily life, in your social life, that's when you should ask for help as soon as you find yourself. See, you, when you let something keep on building and building and building, that's when it becomes bad and bad and bad, right? So it's negative emotions piled up one after another, every day, every day, every day. And your body is really literally addicted to that negative emotion that one day you feel good and your body's like, huh? I don't know this emotion. What is this? No. Take me back to sadness because that was more comfortable. Your body wants to be bloody comfortable in whatever it is that you have been conditioning your body every single day in. And that's why immediately your body's like, no, I shouldn't be happy. I don't deserve to be happy. I deserve to be sad because this is safe. This is what I know, right? That's what your body is doing in a chemical level. And when it gets to a very bad point, that's when you have the chemical imbalance in your body and you need, you know, medications and stuff like that. But if you catch it early enough, you know, not just necessarily early, if you are willing enough, if you have the willpower, you can overcome it at any stage of your life without medications. But I don't want to get into a fight with the medical team. And I'm not undermining their work or anything like that, right? So there is medical cases, a lot of severe depressions and stuff. So I'm not saying that. But most of the depression, it's your lifestyle. It's how you think. It's what you have been holding on to. When you let go of that, all of that will lift and you will become happy again.
Yeah, that's so true. I think we have a conversation with Bikesh in last podcast. I was having that kind of feeling for 2 weeks and I was not accepting those all feelings. I mean, I was a kind of positive guy. I was a kind of optimistic guy. How could I feel that kind of negative emotions? And that 2 weeks was one of the most hardest 2 weeks for in my life. And when I realized that negative mind is something like we have negative emotions, we have positive emotions. We just let it go. It's okay to have negative thoughts and it's okay to have negative feelings. Just let it come and let it go. And when I realized that, and that's when after that moment, I feel much better. And after that, my life completely changed. So I think understanding that, and I think the willing from inside, the power we have that I need to change this, I think that definitely helped. That is, I think, what I experienced.
Amazing.
Yeah. In my experience too, it's like, it's different all the time. Sometimes it's just for like 1-2 days. Sometimes it's for a week. And sometimes it's for months. And when it goes for like months, that's when I start to think about, okay, shit, this is going out of control. That's when I somehow, because I had been through like depression for like 2 months of time where everything was hell. Somehow I can now, as you said, track it when it starts to happen, you know, and I can somehow control it and not let it go out of control now.
That's good. And that takes awareness, isn't it? Awareness of what's happening in your body, what you're thinking, what your state has been, what your physiology has been, and taking active control and determination that, you know what, I'm not letting myself get there. I'll do whatever it takes to come out. And you can.
It's a really good conversation, Meg. Most of the things here we have been talking about, I have related to what you said so much. It was like we were having like an uneducated guest talk in the previous podcast between us, and now we have like more educated, like verified things here.
and that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm thinking like from now on, my next guest will be someone who is more educated, who is more experienced. Because before the couple of episodes were all of my friends. So we were sharing experience through my friends. And I feel like now I need to level up my podcast. I need to bring someone who is more experienced. I need to get those guests who can really add value to this podcast. So, and then suddenly I found you on social media, but I didn't have that connection with you. And I was so scared. I'm like, I'm so afraid to approach that. So, and I decided who could help me on that. So I went to your profile and I saw their Roshna. Oh, she's my friend. And I contacted her. Do you know Resmadi? And said, yeah, I know. And that's how we got connected. And I think seeking out help, figuring out who can help us on these things. Also, I think that's a good approach I found like that. Instead of, I don't know these things, how can I do this? Seeking a help, asking for help, if there's someone who can help on this. And this is also one thing we need in our life. And thank you so much,
Yeah, thank you so much, Resmadi, for joining Sydney Reflect and sharing your so much wisdom to us. And I think this is one of the best, up to now, best podcasts of Sydney Reflect. And thank you so much for all of your wisdom.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for reaching out to me and having that courage. Because when Roshna reached out to me, I said, oh, you know what? This person really, I feel like I should get there because I wanted to help you out because I saw that you couldn't reach out to me. And like my friend was asking, oh, you know what? Let's give him some courage. Let's give him some encouragement because you see, don't be afraid to reach out to people because I'll tell you this. People who have grown, you know, in their thoughts and in their consciousness, let's say, and I'm not bragging about myself in any way, they will always be wanting to help others, you know. So if you want to bring those educated people, if you want to interview them, I used to run as well. I used to run a live Facebook last year. I did that during COVID, as you remember, because I think you were there. I interview a lot of life coaches and lots of, you know, those experts as well. I didn't get a single rejection. So when you are trying to do something good, you know, chances are you won't get rejected. You'll be supported. And this is what I wanted to tell you. I support you. Thank you for having me in your podcast. It's an honor and to be able to share my journey and everything. So all the best for moving forward.
Thank you so much, Resmadi. And thank you so much, Bikesh, for joining as well. Thanks, man.